I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, Gerardo Del Real, here once again with my partner, Mr. Nick Hodge, who's also an investor, publisher of Daily Profit Cycle, editor, hunter, father, son, all sorts of titles the man wears. This is the 353rd episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. We're going to talk markets. We're going to talk what's become a weekly tradition here. The last 3 weeks, Nick, has been a day of pullbacks in the overall indices and in the precious metals markets today, not being an exception. So we'll get to that. We'll get to some of the things going on around the world. For new listeners, for my listeners that are back again, thank you. I hope that those of you that engage in, you know, a smoke or two of marijuana or the cannabis, as they call it, are not undergoing schizophrenia and psychosis, as the social internet tubes would have told you this week if you were paying attention. That was funny to me. But anyhow, first and foremost, Nick, how are you doing today?
The ganja, Gerardo, Reefer Madness is back. I'm doing great. The days are getting longer. It is almost Valentine's Day. Taking the kids to see The Lion King off Broadway this weekend. It's a
beautiful
surprise. Don't tell them. Doing great. How are you and yours?
I am well. We are well, thankful, blessed, grateful. All of the adjectives, healthy, first and foremost. Let's get to it. Look, I mentioned off the top that for the past 3 weeks, every Thursday, there's been a pretty, it's almost like a regularly scheduled program hit, definitely on gold and on silver, right? Down some 3% and 4% and some 10-11% at different points in the day, respectively. Thoughts on technical levels, and then I'll share some of my thoughts, which are going to be pretty consistent with where they've been, if you want a spoiler alert.
Yeah, I think the market has been a little confused. I think that we're still firmly in a bull market for the precious and many of the base metals. I think that rates have done a little two-step, specifically on the two-year, the spiking up a little bit earlier this week on a jobs report that I know you wanted to talk about, and then falling back off. I think that the market misinterpreted Kevin Warsh's, the incoming Fed chair's true stance, and you will get some rate cuts on the back half of this year. I think that the economy isn't growing as fast as it was, and inflation isn't falling as fast as it was, and the market is starting to get a handle on that. And I think that the volatility that we talked about last week, not the VIX, but the gold volatility is still elevated. And as we covered, you can get big swings in the metals when that's happening, i.e. silver, that was $119 when we saw each other a few weeks ago at the end of January, is now $75, but still healthy, robust, all those sort of things, especially when you look at it compared to sort of the AISC or the all-in sustaining cost of the companies that produce those metals and the input prices that were used for many of the developers who were trying to produce those metals. So I don't think the underground issue or underground alpha issue got mailed out yet, but I was writing once again about embracing the volatility, knowing the levels at which you want to buy things, and what I bought over the past week, which maybe we can talk about in the premium portion of this podcast later. But look, gold at 5,000 is nowhere near breaking down technically. Even though it's down over $100 on the day, I guess we're not gonna bomb Iran, and some people are maybe not upset, but selling down the safe haven as a result of that. But all the other bullish tailwinds are intact, including Chinese buying and coming Fed dovishness, as I said, and the debt, which I saw you tweeted about this week, is $38 or $39 trillion. So lots to like still in the metal space.
Yeah, look, I pride myself on being a simple guy with simple ideas and having the wherewithal to see the investment thesis or the speculative thesis play out. And the bottom line is this, look, I did write about the debt earlier this week. The more important takeaway there was, you know, the Congressional Budget Office, which is a nonpartisan office here that looks at the numbers and the projections and does the mathing, right, says that by 2036, the U.S. deficit is projected to be $64 trillion, folks. Wrap your head around that. If anyone believes that we are going to grow our way out of this, or print our way out of this within the next decade or so. I have a bridge in Brooklyn and Manhattan to sell you, maybe two bridges to sell you, because it's not going to happen. So again, excuse me, all of the drivers of demand for gold are firmly intact, right? You have a dollar index that's still the cleanest dirty shirt in the laundry basket, dirty nonetheless. You have deficits that are going to continue to explode. That has been policy under both administrations, Democratic ones and Republican ones, since the days of Bill Clinton. I wouldn't be so sure about the not bombing Iran thing. Mr. Netanyahu will be here soon, and we will Oh, well, there you go. So by the time we get off here, bombs might be flying away. I have a good friend of mine that, a friend of mine that was just deployed to the Middle East. And so, you know, he's been there for a bit. So whatever it is, I don't think he's there for the sightseeing. I'll just put it to you that way. So look, a lot of moving parts, but again, focus on the forest and not the tree. And the forest to me is exploding deficits. And it's not just America. I mentioned that the dollar is the cleanest dirty shirt in the laundry basket. That remains true. It also remains the reserve currency. Will that continue in 2032, 33, 34, 35? Who knows? We'll check then. But in the meantime, it's the best thing going, baby. Whether you like it or not, it's still the best thing going. As Ric Flair used to say growing up as a kid watching wrestling.
Woo!
Whether you like it or you don't like it.
What else, Gerardo?
We got to talk copper. I mean, copper's held in there beautifully despite this sell-off, right? Gold selling off, silver selling off. Copper hanging in there beautifully. Uranium hanging in there pretty beautifully. If this is the new consolidation in the copper and uranium space, I will take that every single time. Copper near $6 on the spot price. Uranium right above the $90 level all week long. Both of those signal bullish sentiment and bullish trend moving forward. Thoughts there?
It is a Chinese New Year, apparently, Gerardo, and those traders have taken a break. I'm sure you've read that in your
Year of the Horse, baby.
I was going to get there in a second. In your Bloomberg and New York Times newsletters, reason for the softness there. I'll name drop, was on a call with Mr. Rule this week. I'm kicking around ideas for what sectors could potentially be most viable in the resource space going forward. He had a lot to say about a nickel, sulfide nickel, and he had a lot to say about copper. He's obviously bullish on oil and gas. He's been talking a lot about that and the industrial slash base metals that are needed for this grid build out, this AI build out, this data center build out. And while those words are coming out of my mouth, I guess I'll just point to some of the tech earnings, which I was including in the monthly issue of Foundational Profits, which will be out tomorrow, Friday the 13th. Spooky. Ooh. And Google was saying when they reported a couple of weeks ago that they're going to spend potentially upwards of like $185 billion. On procuring and securing data compute power and data centers and chips and all the things necessary to maintain a lead or an edge in the AI race. That's something like twice they spent last year. I think they spent $990 some billion. And then Bloomberg had a chart including all of the big players in that field, Microsoft, Meta, Amazon, Oracle, for example. And the combined spending this year is going to be something like $600 to $650 some billion on this AI build out. There's a lot of copper and a lot of hard asset inputs, hard commodity inputs that need to go into that to build it out. So the demand supply equation for copper isn't going anywhere. And we've been through the fundamentals on that. We've been through the supply that's going to come online. We talked about Mr. Friedland in the Oval Office just a couple of weeks ago, who is obviously a huge copper bull with Ivanhoe. And I saw that a little bit of a rambling answer, but, you know, he's going to get some of that copper that he's producing in the DRC over to the United States, has ingratiated himself with the White House. So a lot still to like in the copper sector for sure. And consolidating around $6 or $5.90 is a pretty healthy darn consolidation level.
Yep, couldn't agree more. Ditto for lithium, taking a nice, well-earned and well-deserved and healthy pause, right? Not declining too much, not surging too much. It's ran a lot here over the past 9 to 12 months. And so I think a breather has been healthy. But again, I look at all of these commodities and to me, they're coiled springs. We're seeing what we've said every single week for the past several weeks. The consolidations are taking a lot less time to play out, and the runs are tending to be more violent to the upside. So again, no coincidence to me that in the gold space, most analysts now have a consensus gold price by the end of 2026, anywhere between 6,000 and, you know, 7,600 to 8,000 here by year end. If all I ever get in the gold space moving forward is $5,000 as a new floor, or as the price where people say, and they have been all day, it's hilarious to me, why is gold crashing? I'll take $5,000 as the fixed price for the next 5 to 10 years. If that's the case, I don't believe that to be the case. I do believe we go much higher for all the reasons I listed earlier today. You touched on Fed policy. I wrote a bit about the fact that at the end of the day, it's the deficits that are really going to be the drivers. Decentralization, you know, foreign central banks wanting to go ahead and have more gold as a hedge against decentralization and de-dollarization. I think all of that continues, but I think lost in a lot of that is the volatility that I actually think, look, now I'm rambling, but the volatility that I think this new Fed chair is going to bring, we're already seeing it with the nomination and then a subsequent interview a few days later where Trump says, I made a mistake on that one, which Trump almost never says, right? And I think that was his way of saying, I won't curse yet, folks. Look, if you don't play ball, I'll withdraw this nomination. Like you can go kick rocks. Not a coincidence to me that immediately a day or two after, all of a sudden, the new nominee was very, very willing to play ball. And of course, we have room to cut rates later this year. Not just once, maybe multiple times, right? So look, I think there's going to be continued volatility. Take advantage of it. Buy the dip. Every buy the dip moment has worked out well. And again, I expect higher prices across the commodity space, which is why, shameless plug, we're going to continue to vet quality gold deals with quality teams. I want to touch on that for a bit because several of you are not just listeners of Bizarro World, but you're also subscribers of Private Placement Intel, which, you know, is the accredited investor service. We're down to about, I think, something like 50, 52 spots there. Those are filling quickly, and I suspect we're going to hold on to the bulk of those subscribers for a very, very long time, in part because of how well the deals have done. Recent deals, a perfect example, and I want to touch on a couple of points. We took the full amount of a most recent financing with a company that has a gold antimony deal in Australia. That deal is now up in the open market almost 100%, 85 to 90%. The day after we were given our $2 million allocation to fill the placement, the company received $4 million in requests. Now, I want to be absolutely clear, folks. Nick and I do the best that we can to make sure that everybody gets an allocation. In situations like this where, look, it's not going to be a $4 or $5 or $6 or $7 million financing. The company is going to try to stick to as close as the $2 million as possible. Because of the overwhelming demand, people are going to get cut back. That's just the way that it works, right? We have one of two choices. We either dilute the company, which doesn't serve shareholders like ourselves or yourselves well, and ask the company to increase the placement at a market cap of $7 million, which is where we're raising the money, or we all collectively take a cut on our allocation. The process isn't perfect, but there is a process and a thoughtfulness behind it that is designed to make sure that the structures that we're betting remain in place after the raise happens, right? And so, you know, is it possible that the company will raise slightly more than $2 million to accommodate some people? Absolutely. But it's important to us that we maintain the integrity of why it is we're recommending these deals to you all. And one of the ways that we do that is by ensuring that we don't dilute the living heck out of the share structure by raising too much money at such a low valuation. My advice for those that are really enthusiastic about that story, which you should be, My advice would be the market cap has gone from $7 million to roughly $12 million today. It is an absolute bargain if that team, which we know very well, does a tenth of what I think that team that we know very well is going to do. So look, I have trading accounts where I have trading positions and positions I'm in and out of all of the time. And then I have my separate accounts with a broker that handles all the paperwork and all the private placements and the financings. And so you can do a little bit of both. You can have a liquid position over here, and you can have, the position over here that's going to be tied up for, at least 4 months plus another month or month and a half while the paperwork cleans up your shares. But I did want to provide some context on the process and why those allocations sometimes need to be cut back. Thoughts or anything that I missed, Nick?
No, you said that very well. It's tough sometimes to discern how much demand is going to come in. We've got that cap that we're shooting for on the membership side, 250 people. Depending on the deal, depending on what's going on in the market, the demand can be anywhere from half a million, $1 million to upwards of 2, 3, 4 million bucks, like you were just saying. Look, if gold went down another $200 this week and we put that deal out, I would imagine that the demand wasn't as much. And so we try to align it as best as possible. And of course, we're not perfect. I would say to some of the longtime members that have written in and got cut back or didn't get in contact with the company in time, that you look at your performance over the past couple of years, be a little bit grateful for the deals that have come your way and the performance that they've generated, and know that we're in a bull market, and that's one of the things that's driving this higher demand for deals. And we'll have another deal right on the heels of it open next week. So we'll try to be better about lining up the available amount of financings with what we think is going to be the demand from the private placement intel list. We'll be good about continuing to bring you well-structured deals so there's enough supply for everyone's demand. And I know Jimmy listens to this in member services, and he's talked to a couple of people. If people are truly upset, we're happy to offer some sort of amelioration for their next year's renewal fee, et cetera. And at the same time, and we're getting very close to having a waiting list. So, there's other folks that are going to be able to join private placement if private placement intel, if you don't want to stick around. So, I feel bad for those of you who didn't get all the allocations that you want, and at the same time, know that those are champagne problems. And like Gerardo said, you can buy the company in the open market, which I should add is how some people view private placement intel,
Sure.
right? I know there's folks on the
On the list.
on the list that might not even participate in the private placements. They
Yep.
just know that when we put out a deal to that list, it's an early stage, well-structured, well-run company with a chance of real success, or we wouldn't be funding it. And they use it to position in the open market because of the liquidity, like you said.
Yep.
There's folks in the resource space. I know Brent Cook has said publicly a couple of times that he doesn't really do private placements anymore, being a U.S. citizen and it being more onerous to get those legends removed, as you were saying, to do the paperwork. So no harm in buying in the open market. And then you don't have the 4 month hold time to deal with anyway. So stay tuned for active and existing members of Private Placement Intel, a new deal coming next week. And for prospective buyers of private placement intel, like you said, Gerardo, just a couple of dozen spots left, really, that we expect to fill for sure this year, at which point we'll get to the waiting list portion of this show. So onward and upward and on to the next deal.
Yeah, I also suspect, and I get it. Greed and fear, right? This is a greed portion of the bull market. I do suspect a few people looked at the stock being up 75, 80%, all of a sudden decided they needed a bigger allocation or they wanted to be involved in the deal. Again, those are champagne problems, folks. I have to tease the next two deals because you mentioned the next one that we're doing. The next one that we're doing, which should be to you within the next week. So keep some dry powder, and please, if you didn't get your full allocation with the one that we just recommended, this next one's also another one that 23-ish million dollar market cap team we know very well. You're going to hear that a lot. An established base metals asset in a great jurisdiction. But again, what has me really, really excited about this deal is this company and the team behind it have teamed up with one of the most successful North American prospectors in the gold space in recent memory to bring in a portfolio of projects that I think we'll see here over the next several months. So what you can expect from that company is going to be exposure to copper, exposure to the base metals, exposure to gold, multiple drill programs, top tier jurisdictions. We'll talk more about that later because we had a great question about jurisdictional risk. And, you know, of course, the unfortunate tragedy coming out of Mexico as it relates to a silver company that was operating there. But again, I'm excited about this deal because of the fact that it checks all of those boxes. So that's coming to you here soon. And then again, Nick and I aren't resting on our laurels, right? We have another one that we're betting right now, right? You know, a couple of weeks after that, that I'll tease out a little bit further down the road when we're closer to completing our due diligence process. But if that comes to fruition, again, it'll be a gold deal with millions and millions of gold ounces in the ground in North America. Serially, serially successful group back in the company on an undervalued group of assets that I think will re-rate much, much higher once that comes to fruition. So again, I mean, you know, we kind of have it mapped out for the next month and a half or two, deals parallel to those that we're also betting simultaneously. So please be patient, folks. If you didn't get all the allocation in this one, there's a next one and a next one and maybe even a next one. And all of them are great, great, great shots on goal for making, you know, triple digits, quadruple digits on your hard earned capital.
Well said.
Ah, appreciate you, sir. Appreciate you, sir. I got to breathe a little bit.
Do it. While you do that here, take a breath, because I was gonna show something here, and then can get onto the next topic. I didn't share my screen, but I just wanted to look at rates for a second. And sorry to go backwards, y'all, but this is what Gerardo was talking about with yields and Kevin Warsh. So yep. If you zoom out here, this is the 2 year. Let me get a little bit longer for you here. This is when he was appointed, right here, this arrow, on the 30th of January. The two-year sold-off, this is indicative of, like, Fed policy, right? What are short-term yields the rate's going to do? Because Trump was supposed to appoint a lapdog, so the lapdog was supposed to cut rates, and the rates went down. And then the market misinterpreted it and went back up here to 3.5%. They said, "Oh no, he's a hawk. He's gonna raise the rates or whatever." and then, as you said, he sort of Trump said, you know, he might have made a mistake, and I could potentially replace the nominee. And rates went back down even lower than they were before. The next Fed chair was announced. So you've got a 2 year yield here, that's fallen off, well, maybe not fallen off a cliff, but certainly is at, multi month lows here, and in no danger of going back up, pricing in, you know, rate cuts in the second half of the year. The other thing that happened just today is, the US 10 year was going down precipitously. Look at this red candle right here. And I just wanted to touch on that for a second. This is more indicative of the economic situation than the Fed policy situation. And I think what's happening is, if you'll remember what I was talking about in, I don't know, November, December, January, I was saying, look, no recession. The economy is growing very healthy. Yep. We were getting 4% growth on the GDP. No one could believe that the inflation was going down. New York Times and other, whatever, anti-Trump or you know, progressive leaning rags were saying, you know, the numbers are cooked. They're lying about the CPI, which, just shelve that debate for a second. The fact is the inflation was going down in the CPI based on the soft oil price, as I explained on this podcast, and in some of my premium letters, that, you know, crude oil was down around $55 and gas and diesel were cheap, et cetera. Here, and that's why the 10-year was going back up. The economy was robust and the economy was growing. And now you see the U.S. 10-year is starting to go down, which is the same direction the DXY is going, which will ultimately be good, just like rate cuts will be good for the precious metals complex. But the nuance here is that it's rate of change, to steal Keith McCullough's term from Hedgeye. And oh, by the way, he's been very vocal about, Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, being an adherent or subscriber or at least a listener to Hedgeye. And the same for Kevin Warsh. So I think he's very plugged in. And, you know, in terms of growth and inflation, which is what he talks about all the time, and rate of change, it's slowing down. So the economy is still growing. It's just not growing as fast. And that's the rate of change, right? Instead of a 4% GDP, I think it comes out next week, February 20th, something like that, for the Q4 of 2025, you know, maybe you get 2.5-3% U.S. economic growth. That's not 4%. So it's slowing down, but still growing. It's, you know, wrap your mind around that. At the same time, it's the same with inflation. Inflation was coming down but pretty fast with the cheap oil prices and things like that, and the groceries getting a little bit expensive. We talked about the eggs, less expensive, I should say, et cetera. And now that's starting to level off a bit. So where you had inflation going back to COVID and Biden and money printing and checks getting mailed out and all that at 8%, coming down to 6%, et cetera, and now you're starting to level off at 3.5%. So you've got a little bit of change in the markets. And the last thing I would add to that, I'll stop sharing my screen, is you've got different sectors of the S&P starting to lead, right? For the past, I don't know, gosh, half a decade, 4 years, yeah, it's been information technology and communication services. I'm talking about these sectors of the S&P now that were leading: Amazon, Microsoft, Meta,
OnlyFans,
all that sort of stuff. Well, they're not listed, but yeah, they certainly had robust growth. I think I said on this podcast, they had more earnings in a quarter than like Yum Brands did, which owns KFC, Taco Bell, for example. They generated more revenue.
Yum.
But anyway, different sectors are, yum. That's funny. Different sectors are starting to lead, like energy and industrials are now leading, and consumer staples. I think those are the top three sectors of the S&P so far this year. I have a tab open. I could tell you if that's true. Energy, consumer staples, materials, excuse me.
Yep.
Whereas the worst sectors of the year so far are financials and communication services, and IT is flat. So just a little bit of rotation going on. And you can see that, as you mentioned, Gerardo, the past three Thursdays we've recorded, it's been red in the markets. Yeah, we're not getting that robust economic growth like we were. Some more defensive sectors are starting to lead, and oil prices have come up a bit. So just a bit of sector rotation going on.
I like it. I want to pivot to things that are true and things that aren't true. In the week of social media and the tubes, and then we can get on to a more serious topic from a reader and a question that we had. But, you know, all week you were telling me, Nick, and I didn't catch it because it's been a busy week, but, you know, there's been, a campaign about AI going to take all of our jobs again, right? And so I would love for you to share some thoughts on that, because my initial gut reaction is to say, that's not true. That's not going to happen, right?
Yeah, I mean, this has been a fear for a while now, right? And we've seen the software apocalypse in the past couple of weeks with vibe coding. I don't know if you've come across that term yet, and Claude. You're putting out new updates that make coding easier, and even ChatGPT having a new update recently. They continue to improve. And so now, you know, you can write little blog posts on Twitter. And one of the ones that was super viral in the past couple of days has been about this guy who works in AI. This time it's different. It's coming for your jobs. He doesn't even need to code anymore. He can just tell Claude what he wants the project to be. And he walks away for a couple of hours and he comes back and the code is written and the project is done and there's no mistakes. And this is coming for all the things, right? The white collar jobs, the accountants, the doctors, the lawyers, All you guys are going to lose your jobs and you should be very afraid. And it's very, well, it's obviously viral. It preys on your fears. It preys on your lizard brain, right? We're more conditioned and programmed as a species to fear the lion more than to cuddle the monkey. It's just evolutionary biology. And so when we see negative things, they scare us and we interact with them more and we believe them to be true, even though they may not be. And so this narrative has come for a while. As I said, the software stocks were, I don't want to say decimated, but they definitely sold off in the past couple of weeks, as did some of the law firm stocks, some of the publishing stocks. I'm really embracing this suck of, AI is gonna take all this workload off of us, which a couple of things, right? It's like the toll booth analogy, which I'm sure I've shared on here. It's like, when we first had automated toll booths, it's like, yep. Oh, all the toll booth operators are going to get laid off and it's going to decimate whatever the toll booth operator economy. but the
that
fact
sounds
of the
funny.
Matter, the fact of the matter is economy. That automated toll booths allow more cars to go through the tolls more quickly. And as a result of that, there's more an increased productivity that more than offsets the toll booth operators who unfortunately lose their jobs because the toll booths were automated. I would suspect that that's going to be true with AI, where it increases productivity and ultimately leads to more commerce, more things getting done, and higher GDP versus everyone losing their jobs. And the last thing I would say is, look, especially as it relates to some of the professional degrees and those who require insurance, i.e. Attorneys who need malpractice insurance and doctors who need malpractice insurance and industries that rely on those professionals. Look, I don't think that they're going to outsource that in the near future to an AI machine that's going to need to be underwritten and insured. I'm not sure that's going to happen in the near term. And so I guess one more thing. I know I said last thing, but Gerardo, you and I have attorneys, I'm proud to say. And
attorneys for a long time.
I was noticing in some of their engagement letters that AI is heavily mentioned, that they use AI as a tool.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm saying here. AI is going to be used as a tool. I don't think it's going to be representing anybody in court. Et cetera, and on down the line. So very clickable, but perhaps not true, which I think is what you said was the theme for this section.
It is. It is. Another thing that's not true, folks, is that marijuana causes schizophrenia. Look, there was a coordinated, and I don't have a dog in the fight. I'm not a cannabis smoker. I'll have a puff every now and then of the wife's vape, but it's not my thing. I like a good vodka soda. And I like a good Cabernet every now and then, right? So no dog in the fight here. I like to stick to things that are true and factual. And when I see a coordinated campaign from just anonymous accounts all over the internet during the week saying how crazy marijuana is and testimonials from, you know, how much their lives have improved since they stopped smoking cannabis. And that may be the case, right? But it was really exaggerated, definitely coordinated. And of course, you know, it's funded by the alcohol lobby, yeah. Folks. Like, let's be 100% transparent about it. I am all for, I've had several friends and acquaintances that have gone completely cold turkey on everything. And it is the best thing that ever happened for them, right? But let's be absolutely clear. Alcohol is much more of a danger to anyone's health than cannabis or marijuana ever will be. So, you know, is marijuana going to make you crazy? Is it going to make you schizophrenic? Is it going to cause psychosis? You're not going to die from it. All those things are not true. Let's talk about some things that are true, unless you have something to chip in there on the marijuana debate there, Mr. Hodge.
Sure. You know, I always got something to say. So agree that it was coordinated. You know, there's pros and cons to everything in life, everything in moderation. I often say truth is somewhere in the middle. Chamath Palihapitiya was out there talking about one of those viral tweets again that was, you know, everyone I know who smokes weed is a dirtbag, scumbag, lazy piece of shit. I'm paraphrasing.
I told him he had to get out more.
I saw, you know, he owns a high-end tequila business.
Of course.
Or is partial owner, right? So, and obviously, or maybe not obviously, I don't know how much news you guys read, people are drinking less, especially the generation behind the millennials. I think we call them Gen Z.
Yep.
They're drinking less. They're doing fewer drugs. They're going out less. You know, beer and alcohol and wine sales are on the decline, and marijuana is on the incline. And so, also, and we're getting closer than ever under the Trump administration for, you know, good things and bad things that this gentleman does. Or one of the good things is trying to expedite the reclassification or the rescheduling of cannabis. And I think that's got the alcohol industry really scared. They're
sure.
clearly losing market share in the recreational intoxicant market, let's call it. So, yeah, I don't think anyone's ever died from or a marijuana overdose. Maybe they find themselves going under the speed limit, and certainly don't operate your heavy machinery while you're taking your toke. But schizophrenia and lazy pieces of shit, I'm not buying them.
Let's talk about some things that are true. I think the Epstein file and the
Dow's at 50,000, Gerardo, the S&P's at all-time highs. Why are we talking about this?
That was the response from America, the great country of America's attorney general, under oath to our elected lawmakers, whether we like them or not. And so what I am supposed to believe and where I was going is, you know, I said last week that I think this has to be the biggest covered up scandal in the history of America. I'm going to stand by that. And I look, we're going to have a very special guest here in a couple of weeks that I'm really excited to have that's been at the forefront of this for nearly two decades. And, you know, one of this gentleman's, I don't want to say that they're great friends, but I know he defends him very, very vigorously anytime there's an attack. And so there's a journalist named Whitney Webb, Whitney Webb, who has done a phenomenal job on this. 6 years ago, Whitney Webb wrote, "Your reminder that Leslie Wexner of Victoria's Secret, Fabio, financed the mass rape and trafficking of thousands of American children for over a decade. And right now he is sitting in a 26,000 square foot mansion in New Albany, Ohio, thinking that he is above the law." This was in 2020. I saw a gentleman that was executed by ICE agents about a month or so ago. And many online justified that by saying he was clearly protesting and he kicked the taillight. And so the next week, which he wasn't arrested for, again, we never saw the whole video, but the very next
week. No one's above the law, Gerardo. No one's above the law.
Correct. But the Dow's at 50,000. What are you talking about, Nick? Aren't you rich? Like, the Dow's at 50,000. Have you seen the indices? That was the response that the attorney general gave as to why not one person has been arrested outside of the dead guy who's maybe not dead, and the lady that got a minimum security favor and a puppy from this administration, why no one else is under arrest. The answer we got was the Dow is at 50,000. Why are we still talking about this? We must move on. And I have to say to my friends on the right and my friends on the left, I actually am someone heartened that this is one that a lot of y'all are uniting around, because my God, if there was ever an issue that we should be able to agree on, and then everybody, I'm more of a libertarian, but then all of us, you know, all three parties and all three different viewpoints could get back to like arguing civilly about whatever we want to argue about, the Second Amendment, a woman's right to reproductive rights, gay marriage, you name it, whatever you want to disagree about later on, we could do it. But I would like to believe, and I'm starting to at least smile a little bit at the fact that I am seeing very vocal voices with big platforms on both sides do complete 360s on this issue. Everybody from the Joe Rogans of the world to, you know, I could go on. Many people, Tim Pool, who, you know, I don't know how the heck he got famous, but look, he, you know, he's gone from, you know, this administration is the next best thing since Jesus to what? Like, are we serious right now? And so maybe a step in the right direction. Do you want to tell them who our guest is going to be, Nick, here on March the 5th? It's not next week, but it is March the 5th. And we're going to do a deep dive into the recent developments and just, you know, how far now that we have a lot more information, and so much of it is tragic and absolutely disgusting. So trigger warning for anybody out there before you go down the rabbit hole of finding out what's in some of these files, prepare to be just absolutely disgusted and sickened. Because as much as I want to get to the bottom of who and what and where and learn from it to try to make sure I'm vigilant in my own little way and you know, help just be alert if this kind of stuff is going around to help prevent it or stop it or whatever little bit I can do. It's tough, Nick. It's really, really tough to read some of this stuff, man. And then, you know, they had the videos, some of the videos that have made it. And, you know, if this is the stuff they're putting out, they're withholding a whole bunch of stuff still. They've admitted that. If this isn't the worst of it, I can't only imagine. But very special guest on March the 5th. I hope y'all tune in and listen. We'll definitely talk markets, gold, and all of that. But we're also going to get into a deep dive on this stuff here because he's been on top of it.
Well, it's Rudy Havenstein. We've had him on the podcast before. And thanks to you, Gerardo, for lining that up and keeping the lines of communication open. Obviously, go follow him on Twitter if you're not.
Great follow. One of my favorites.
Stuff to say, deep research, a long history, as you say, of covering this and trying to bring transparency to it. We'll see what he has to say about the most recent release of the files, because you can tell he's definitely more disgusted, if that's possible, than he was before we started learning what we've learned over the past couple of weeks. We've kicked this horse. I'm not saying we need to move on, but we've kicked this horse a lot over the past couple of weeks. Yeah. So I'm not going to get my blood boiling over it, although I think you know how I feel about it as well. Pam Bondi said that in addition to we should move on and look at your retirement accounts, et cetera, which is, by the way, only rich people in this K-shaped economy, which is a whole nother issue. That, you know, the system would implode if we told you and showed you everything. So to that, I would say, you know, let it implode. Yeah. Back to the, yeah, you know, what's Ben Hunt say from Epsilon? Let it fucking burn. Burn it the fuck down. And part of the fourth turning, I would add, the ekpyrosis is the total burning down of the systems, and then you've got to recreate them in a better way. It's clearly time to do that. There's clearly an entire ruling oligopolistic class that is above the law and has their own social circles and skirts the law, makes laws for themselves, and bends whatever they want to bend, including the founding documents of this country, to their favor. And the best thing that could be happen was for them all to get the fuck out.
Couldn't agree with you more. Again, and it's been said many times, a system that upholds this stuff is not a system worth having, folks. It's supposed to be for the people, by the people, not for the sick and rich. And I'm not saying all the rich are sick. I'm talking about these particular groups of thousands of pedophiles and rapists that did absolutely horrific things to kids and around the world, here in the U.S., overseas, the U.K., you name it. It's just absolutely tragic. I'm going to keep bringing it up because I just can't believe this stuff exists. It's true. And I'm going to keep bringing it up until I start seeing some accountability. And again, this administration should be absolutely ashamed of itself for acting like they are supposed to be the mop cleaning up the mess instead of going after the people whose faces and names they themselves have redacted. It's inconceivable to me that they know who these people are. And these people are still out there, like Whitney Webb so brilliantly said 6 years ago, hanging out in their 26,000 square foot mansion in Ohio. It's utterly inconceivable to me that that is a true thing. But in 2026 in America, folks, that is a true thing. And look, obviously the mood isn't an upbeat one. So I want to get to a question from something that, you know, obviously, I think not just anybody in the mining space, but just if you're a human being, you know, touches your heart. And look, there's a silver company. I don't want to get into the name because the minute it happened, it wasn't but like 30 minutes after this became public that everybody was a cartel expert or a mining expert or an expert on Sinaloa and the region's politics. And by politics, I mean the cartel politics. I don't want to go down that road. So I'm not going to comment specifically on the company, the way it's handled this thus far, how I think it plays out. A lot of that would be speculation anyway. What I will say is 10 miners were kidnapped from a silver company in Sinaloa. Five of them up to this point, I believe, have been identified and unfortunately are dead. And of course, it's speculated by the media that, you know, the other five pending identification have also been killed. It is an absolute tragedy. And so we had a gentleman, and thank you to Simon. I'm not going to say the name of the company you asked me about. I will save that for the premium portion of the podcast. But the question says, as a subscriber to Bizarro World, I'm not sure if you covered this in a recent episode, as I've caught up with the last one fully. I haven't caught up with the last one fully yet. Interesting to hear your reflections in relation to what happened with the 10 kidnapped minors that were found dead tragically. He goes on to ask me about the position that I currently hold in this company, not the company this happened to, but a company that also operates in Mexico. He says, I want to continue holding it for the potential upside. I'm up 67% so far, but nervous, mindful that it could turn bad at any point as miners could become more widely targeted. Anyone investing in the sector or workers there is taking one hell of a risk. This is not a one-off tragedy. He goes off to mention, you know, other situations that happen in Mexico. So let me say this. As it relates to cartel activity in Mexico, it is extremely, extremely local. And the politics can change from one town to the next. As any of you know that have been with me for quite some time, my mother was kidnapped by a cartel 3 years ago, December the 26th, 3 years ago. And the 3 days of me figuring out how to make sure she was alive, unharmed, and returned safely, because the numbers say that the bulk don't, were three of the most agonizing days, the most agonizing days of my life. With that being said, whether we're talking Sinaloa or my home state of Zacatecas, the politics can change within a 40-minute drive. And if anyone wants to get online and tell you that they know the exact politics of what's going on in Sinaloa or in Zacatecas or anywhere else, good luck with that, because that can change in a day. That can change in 6 days. I was in Mexico, in Zacatecas, when the established order in our town, which had been there for many generations, people, frankly, we all grew up around and knew very, very well. When all of a sudden, you know, a new group came in and decided it was going to take over the local politics of the town. And it turned into a war zone. It's been a war zone in my state ever since. And it changes almost every year. It goes back and forth, right? With all of that being said, Mexico continues and has been for a very, very long time the top producing silver country in the world. That is not going to change anytime soon. What needs to change is companies, and I'm not singling this company out. I'm speaking in general terms here. I want to be clear. Companies need to be more proactive about their security protocols, the regions in which they choose to operate in, and they need to do years of due diligence or have eyes on the ground that are not compromised to avoid the potential for something like this happening. And look, there's ways to go about that. If you're operating locally, you should know what those ways are. I'm not here to walk you through it, folks. But if you don't know what those ways are, then you shouldn't be operating in any area that has as much volatility as the two states, which I just named. Several of those miners happen to be from the state of Zacatecas, which is tragic and ironic in an ugly way to me, that they were likely not working in Zacatecas because of the dangers there right now, decided to go over here thinking there's somewhat, you know, a buffer. I got this company that's worth hundreds of millions of dollars, whatever it's worth now. I'll be safer here. Let me take this job to feed my family, and they end up dead for it. Right. And so you're going to see a lot of reports, a lot of opinions, a lot of takes online over the next several days. I'm not here to comment on any of that stuff. I'll wait till all of the facts are out. My heart goes out to those people that were killed tragically. And again, I'll talk in the premium portion of the podcast about the company specifically that Simon asked about, but it is different from town to town, from municipality to municipality, and most definitely from state to state. And so that, unfortunately, I don't think changes anytime soon. Jurisdictional risk is going to continue in Mexico. It's unfortunate. It's affected an entire country. It's affected my life personally. And look, as long as the corruption enables it, it's going to continue. But there are protocols and ways and things that you can do to mitigate the likelihood of some of that happening. And so I urge all companies operating in the region to continue to operate with the utmost care and caution in regards to safety for yourselves and, you know, for your staff and the people around you and the people around the community. So, yeah, that's as much as I'll touch on that.
Just a question, because I don't have a lot to add to that. What about the, you mentioned the changes from city to city and town to town. What about from state to state? So what about like Sonora and Chihuahua versus Durango and Zacatecas and Sinaloa?
Big differences. I mean, just big differences and differences that can change, right? Without getting into names or specifics for obvious reason, you know, in my town, again, for the longest time, it was just one group. And so if you weren't involved in anything illicit, you didn't have a thing to worry about. That was like paradise to me, right? We'd go down there and we'd shut the street down for a couple of weeks and have block parties. We'd go get a permit. There was a county president. There was a police force at the time, right? And you just knew that, yeah, there was the small corruption, right? The cops spoil the American kids over and, you know, they shake them down for $5 or $10, but it was minimal. It was very, very unspoken rule that you didn't touch the populace, that didn't have anything to do with the drug trade. And if you had something to do with the drug trade, then that's been the same way how it's always been. You know what the rules are. You know what the consequences are. You play by them. You live by them. You die by them. That is what it is. And that's never going to change either. But there was a time where just it was hands off of innocent people. You didn't extort. You didn't kidnap. You didn't rob. You didn't rape. That is not the norm anymore. And so, like, in my town, it seems like every year and a half, like, a new group is either in charge or a new group is challenging to be in charge. And the challenging to be in charge always is the killing and beheading and kidnapping and extorting and everything else that goes along with it. See who can do it the most to try to inflict the most pain to see if the other group will leave. That's the way that it's done. And so you may have a year of peace and think, well, it's been peaceful for a year. I'm comfortable with this group that's there. They seem to be staying out of the way of the local populace. If you're not doing anything wrong, you're going to be okay. And you might just catch yourself, like I did way back in 2010, in the middle of this new group just coming in and trying to do a change of the guard. So even if you know that it's different from state to state, and it is very different from state to state, groups operate similarly, but very differently depending on the group. Even if you know what that looks like and what the politics are, it can change in a heartbeat. It can change in a day. I mean, you know, it's not a coincidence that anytime we have federal elections or municipal elections back home and it always is preceded by a wave of violence, because groups start trying to fill the power vacuum that is going to exist with new administrations coming on. And so not to get too grim, but I remember, I think it was 2010, 11 or 12, there was a governor's race in Zacatecas, and the governor had been loyal to one group. Like explicitly, like you could just operate, leave the people alone, and everything's going to be okay. A new group came in and started paying a bribe to the same governor, and the governor thought that it would be okay to take money from both sides. And what ended up happening is and it's not funny, but the first group that was the ruling group that had been there for a very long time and had long ties to this governor started dumping bodies during a campaign, because it was a campaign year, started dumping bodies in front of the presidency, the governor's mansion, the equivalent of the governor's mansion, every day or every week, at least, with signs that said, if the governor can't keep himself safe and this away from his doorstep, what can he do for you? And they elected a new governor. So when we talk about like the politics and how quickly it can change, it's really unpredictable. And it wasn't always that way, but it is that way right now. And in regions and hotbeds like Sinaloa and Zacatecas and Guerrero, and, you know, a lot of these other places, you have to know what's going on, and you have to know on a day by day basis. And if anything changes, you better take a hands off approach till you figure out what it is that changed. Right. And so changes happen. People know when those changes happen. It's not a secret. When that happens, there needs to be protocol in place that says, as a result of taking extreme precaution, We're pausing operations until we get more clarity on whatever it may be, this electoral cycle, whatever. However they want to word it to make it sound good in American and Mexican newspapers, do it, but get it done.
But you're still going to invest in Mexico.
Absolutely. One of my largest holdings, which is the holding that Simon is asking about, is in Mexico. It's in a region that I feel comfortable with. It's in a region that, like all of Mexico, has cartel activity. But where your project is in relation to other operations and how long those operations have operated there successfully is a good indicator of the buffer or the moat that you have politically, locally, financially. And so, you know, there's regions where mining has gone uninterrupted, you know, for many, many, many years without incident. There's a reason for that, right? And there's regions that keep having issues like gold being taken or workers being taken or workers being killed or worse. And it's not a coincidence that those regions tend to be the same ones kind of over and over, right? So yes, Mexico, local. Yes, I need to be familiar with the region, the area, the team, understand their security protocols. The company Simon's asking about, the executive and the CEO, they're out there this weekend, lining up drill targets. I'm excited for that, cashed up, ready to go. So, look, I'm actually going to shoot a video with the team from the field here on Monday or Tuesday that I'm excited to bring all of you at Resource Stock Digest. So, meanwhile, I haven't gone back home in years because of said politics and all the, you know, the situation around my mom's kidnapping. So, again, yeah, I'm comfortable investing there. I'm not comfortable going back home visiting tios and tias and cousins and friends that I still have out there, because no matter how much I care about them, I have kids and a wife and a family and friends and people that depend on me, and it's not worth the risk, right?
That's it.
Yep.
Well done, by the way. Thank you. A little bit of local flair there. On to the premium portion of this podcast.
Let's get to the premium portion of this podcast. I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, Gerardo Del Real, here with my partner, friend, and colleague, Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 353rd, I can't believe that, episode of our weekly therapy session we call Investing in Bizarro World. Going to be a volatile 2026, folks, but I think when it all shakes out, it's going to be volatile to the upside in regards to the metal space and most definitely to the portfolio. Take care out there. Happy Valentine's Day, everyone.
See ya.